Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Julianne Mirabello studied fashion design at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. She's also a 200-hour Ishta-trained yoga instructor and a Reiki Level 2 attuned practitioner. I met Julianne back when she did her teacher training without knowing her career in fashion. So we've gotten to talk a fair amount about that since then. And I wanted to share the really unique way she thinks about clothing and one's personal relationship with fashion and style and clothing itself as a material in terms of its spiritual value. So I'm sort of making her work a little bit differently from how she likes to interact with people, just as a way to give you a little taste of how she thinks about it. And hopefully you'll be intrigued enough to follow up with her in person. So we're going to dabble a little bit in theory and a little bit in practice, and I think you'll enjoy this a lot. Here we go. Hi, Julianne.
Hi, Peter.
Welcome. I have known you for a long time now, since you did your teacher training. When was that?
2015, I think. Yeah, 2015.
Yeah. And you were practicing yoga before that. When and how long and where?
Oh, man. I used to go to the Integral Yoga Studio when I lived over on 14th Street. I didn't care for their asana practice that much, but I love the meditation.
Yeah.
It's a fun place.
Yeah. They're a good lineage.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but that place has a lot of interesting things going on. It was always an experience.
Yeah. And then one of the things I noticed actually when we were finishing teacher training, because during teacher training, we were mostly talking yoga, but we were all out celebrating at the end of your teacher training. And it became clear to me how you have this eye based on your career in fashion that you were picking out like a sweater on somebody and knowing who made the sweater and what is it for. And this is like something that always amazes me and impresses me about people who do styling. It's like, it's serious shit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So how did you come into that? Like what got you interested and how did the career happen?
Well, many years ago, I used to make costumes for like Comic-Con and cosplay people. So that's how it began. And I had other random kind of jobs in fashion. And I knew a girl who was doing styling. And that's how it happened.
And so, when you found this person who was doing styling, was it a thing you knew about? Or she like introduced you to the whole idea?
No, I knew about it, but I didn't really understand how it worked. So just seeing that that was possible for me, I was like, oh, okay, this is something I'd like to do, something that looks fun. She was working more with celebrities. And so it was a bit of a different clientele than I have and have had. But yeah, that's how that came about.
Yeah. And I guess that distinction is also something that I wanted to talk about with you today, because you go beyond this sort of like decoration of people, like you might think of as going on TV at an award show or something like that. You're like looking for something essential about a person when you're talking about how they dress and what their clothing means to them. And I know this from personal experience because you've given me a fair amount of advice along the years.
That is true.
Yeah.
So I read a while ago, I read this book. I can't pronounce the author's name. It's called Shambhala, Path of the Warrior or something like that. And he talks about this thing called the Drala Principle. And it's a it's a non-dualist, like Buddhist term that means like overcoming the enemy. Mm-hmm. And it kind of refers to this kind of magic that we can invoke in our everyday life when we're in touch with the tattvas, as we would say in like Ishta Tantra language. And so when I combined my knowledge of that with what I learned in teacher training, it was like this whole thing popped open. Hmm. And he discusses how, you know, this can only happen, or this doesn't happen when ego's involved. Hmm. So if you're dressing up with the idea of like looking super cool or like having to impress this person, you don't get to experience this magic. And so, yeah, I kind of look back on that and I get extremely personal with my clients to help them connect with the sense world in that way.
Interesting. There's a couple of things I want to talk to you about today. One is just the sort of theory of it. And then the other is the practical outcome of it, like what you're doing for people. But maybe we could talk a little more about the theory first. When you're looking, like, do you have a set of questions or ideas? Do you go on intuition? Do you like stare someone down and figure out what's in the windows of their soul? And like, how are you?
So it's evolved over the years. I've been doing this for 7 years now. And I have two ways of working with people until very recently. One is just kind of an all-inclusive situation where I go to people's house and I do a lot of the work for them. Mm-hmm. And the second way that came up when I relocated from New York to a city that is, people have less disposable income, is where I put together a package of questions and people kind of do their own like self-inquiry, take their own vitals, if you will, before I meet with them, which eliminates so much of the work. And then we can chat together, and it's kind of like a three-part process that concludes with them having a list of recommendations that apply specifically to them. So they're having to put in a lot of the self-study, if you will, rather than just having me sweep in and manage the project for them, which is fun, but less rewarding for me. And I think over time, less beneficial to the client because they don't learn anything.
Right. They get some good wardrobe, but not necessarily know how to go forward.
It's the difference between having like a personal chef and taking a cooking class. And I found out I like teaching the cooking class.
That's great. So the kinds of, when you mentioned the tattvas, for anybody who doesn't know that, we're talking about like the elements of our world, you know, the earth, water, fire, air, space.
Yes.
How those interplay. And how do those apply in this realm of fashion? Like what are you looking at? What are you looking for when you're considering those?
Well, fashion, I mean, it's primarily vision, but it's also tactile because you're feeling it on your body and other people may feel it as well. And it also involves locomotion, the one that correlates to the feet, the moving one. Yeah, because you can, I mean, your shoes impact your gait. Everybody, please take good care of your shoes and resole them often. It can have pretty devastating health consequences if you're walking around crooked all day, you know, applying your weight to the ground. But so those are the three that I really focus on. But also, I mean, smell. If you're wearing a lot of polyester, it can just end up being unpleasant to have on. So
interesting. I remember when we were working together most recently, you were talking even about certain fabrics having, you know, qualities that are a little bit more nuanced, right? Like I have a teacher friend who wears black because she feels like it has an impact on the energy that she's receiving. And you mentioned something about silk having certain qualities. So how much do you consider things like that, color, the actual material versus less like the practical of, you know, polyester will get more odor than cotton?
Well, it's specific to the individual. Like if you live very far away from a dry cleaner and you're a very stinky person, it may be a real hassle for you to own silk. You have to be cleaning it constantly and washing. It's just not right for you. But for someone else who doesn't have these conditions, they have a dry cleaner right nearby, or the silk will not be, you know, subjected to many hazards during the day. That may be a great choice for them because it does have energy retentive properties. And all these fabrics, there's such interesting history around it because they've been regulated through sumptuary laws, like since the beginning of time. And we're kind of living in the first time now in the Western world where we're free of these.
What are those? I don't know what that word.
Oh, so sumptuary laws, they're laws that were made basically to, I would say they were kind of like the first copyright laws almost, to like restrict use of something so it maintained its value. So there was laws in like ancient Greece that like prostitutes had to wear this color, and guys who were visiting the prostitute also had to wear a certain color so people knew what each other were up to. In the Middle Ages in Italy, like only certain people could wear certain fabrics because the upper class didn't want the middle class to be confused with them. Caesar was the only guy allowed to wear a certain color of purple. They almost drained the treasury over this Tyrian purple snail robe situation. And they were importing, I mean, they were importing a lot of silk from China. They didn't want the money to go to China. There's this whole massive history over people regulating what fabrics other people are allowed to have on their body.
Wow.
I think even in the Bible, there's something about not wearing clothes of cloth of mixed materials. And so people have taken this to be like super fundamentalist, like, oh, we have to wear 100% cotton or whatnot. The only reason they were doing that is because the priests were wearing mixed cotton robes, you know, mixed material robes. So, yeah, I'm fascinated
so now
by all this.
Yeah, but like you say, now, you know, when you go to shop for your own clothing, you don't think, oh, I only wear X. We've gone 100% in the other
direction.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've gotten totally out of our head. And I think that it would probably be to everyone's benefit to get tuned back into exactly what fabrics they're applying to their body, the same way in which we consider things we put in our mouth.
Right. And I guess that's kind of a potential mindfulness kind of thing, like to put something on and see how it feels.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I got dressed like three times today because we're in New York and it's 24 degrees outside and 80 degrees in my apartment.
Oh my goodness. I don't miss that.
trying to figure out how long can I keep the windows open before I start recording.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make it, but yeah, the mid-Atlantic states are difficult to dress for, that's for certain.
Mm-hmm. So where you are now, you avoided saying, and it's okay if you're like in a spy situation.
No, I'm not. People have asked me if I'm a spy before. It really freaks me out because they can't tell where I'm from.
So what are people wearing there? Are people doing any of this stuff you're talking about, or are they you know, all shopping at H&M, or what's happening?
Yeah, here in the Netherlands, we love H&M. People are very, in New York, people are very into like sending messages with their clothing, like more of a watch or a bag that says something about your accomplishments or those that you'd like to have. However, here people are super modest, but it's to me a maladjustment all the same. If they have money for nice things, they won't buy them. They're embarrassed to wear their watch. They won't get a nice car. It's really kind of this Tomasic denial situation rather than like the Rajasic enthusiasm of New York or most of America.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So does that mean everybody's sort of like in the uniform of H&M's current season, or
that's,
people are wearing old clothes or what?
It's so bizarre. People wear cowboy boots, leopard print, everything. I'm not making this up. It sounds crazy. This is like, cheap sweaters that are made of polyester, and they really like those big jackets, like really big coats that like make you look like a refrigerator. And it's not even that cold here. It's very dramatic and not aerodynamic for the bicycle either. They say they dress this way for the bike, but it's
down coats or
like puffy coats or like lamb coats, like anything big that makes you look like, you know, a smeg refrigerator. Yeah. It's, it's a lot to look at.
My sister got me to watch Game of Thrones.
How is it?
It's like I'm watching with one eye covered. You know, it's like, not another piece of cruelty.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's kind of hooks you in.
That's a lot to take in.
But they have very big coats in the north.
Well, we don't. I mean, the only reason I think people need warm clothes here is because they're extremely thrifty. So their houses are freezing. And public spaces, like, such as yoga studios or restaurants, they're not warm either. Like everybody is really saving their pennies over here. It's not very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
My house is 21 degrees. I'm like an iguana. I don't care. I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, I could wear my cashmere sweater and Harris tweed over there and be very comfortable.
Exactly.
You know, because here, like, I can't even get near putting those kind of clothes on until I'm ready to go out the door. And then if there's any delay, it's like,
oh my goodness.
Melting.
No, I'm quite happy with, living in a milder temperature, it does make it easier to get dressed. So when you think of acquisitions and the overall setup of what you own, it will have to be more diverse and greater if you're living in a climate like New York than, you know, compared to a much more mild climate like the Netherlands or Belgium or Florida even.
Although Florida gets super hot in the summer. We've been down visiting my sister in Key West in June, and it was really unbearable. It, you know, I mean, obviously the weather fluctuates, but when it's hot, it's hot.
I never need to experience heat over 75 degrees again in my life. I'm done. Yeah. I'm checking out of summer.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Because the globe is the globe is against you.
I'm just
going to
keep going north. Like, I'm not.
Yeah. See you in Helsinki.
Yeah. Eventually, 20 years, I'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about this third way that you sort of hinted at earlier?
Yeah. So I'm launching an online course so people can learn how to do this work for themselves.
The work of choosing your own fashion.
Yeah, of the process of assembling a personal collection rather than, I mean, people right now are using subscription box services to get clothing. I know people who are doing this, or the expense of on a regular basis, hiring someone on an hourly basis to come to your house or take you shopping. And this is all a response to both the fact that we all have to take pictures on Instagram now. And I've also met with some people who've gone kind of like overboard on the minimalism. I've worked with recovering minimalists where it's gone kind of anorexic. You know, they clean everything out and then realize, oh my goodness, I don't have anything. I got rid of something I loved. Everything is gray. You know, the wardrobe just falls flat.
Right.
So
you're going to copyright that term, right? Recovering minimalist.
Recovering minimalist. Well, no, I mean, minimalism is right for some people, but if you don't have a washer dryer in your apartment, probably a really difficult thing to pull off, right? If you're running to the, you know, if you have six shirts and you're running to the laundromat twice a week, that sounds like it's not a suitable practice for you to have. Yeah, or people who just end up buried in stuff. You know, someone with a more, a lot of people with more kapha dispositions end up with like all of the things, like a bit of a hoard. Yeah, just helping people kind of from an Ayurvedic standpoint, learn how to manage that in regards to their closet is kind of my niche.
Uh-huh. And so what will be the format of this course?
Similar to how I work with people one-on-one right now, when I have them take their own diagnostics, reflect upon them, and then assemble the final pieces. But I teach people basic color theory, how to identify which trends work for you, your basic body shape, how your gait and your voice impact what you're wearing or what you might not want to wear. Like, for example, if someone has like a very staccato voice, it's not good for them to be wearing a ton of jewelry that's also rattling around. That can be very unsettling if you're doing any sort of public speaking or otherwise. Or if someone's super quiet, you know, and very soft spoken, they may want to wear more loud accessories that give them some life so that people actually, you know, their eyes are drawn and they're able to therefore hear them better as we're directed forward. You know, if you're kind of pitta and you're having an angry day, leave the red at home, you know, the loud shoes.
Uh-huh. So these are lots of very specific tips that you know from all your, you know, work and years of observation and whatnot. Are you going to be working more at the level of theoretical and people have to sort of get to these nuances themselves? Or are you going to have a lot of tips like that in whatever the medium is that you're sharing this?
There will be a basis of theory, and then afterwards I'll assemble hopefully enough examples that they are able to fill in the blanks and make good choices for themselves. But people have to understand the theory if they hope to go forward doing this forever.
Yeah, it's the cooking class.
Yeah, like...
And I guess, you know, you mentioned trends and like there's certainly classic style, right? Like a lot, there's a lot of sort of things one can always go to without being stuck in the same wardrobe for always, right? So, but then there's staying current with whatever's new, that can be a trap as well.
Well, it is a trap. So, and right now it's kind of in vogue for all these companies to be selling, you know, it's, or I guess it's called greenwashing.
What is that?
You know, buy this recycled shirt or whatever, and it's not actually that great for the environment, but we've all been kind of guilted into the correct direction, but people are doing this just to make a quick buck. You know, Nike is making recycled shoes.
Right.
It's a trend. I mean, it's a good trend, but it's still a trend. And we need to be,
right.
You know, when you buy a Patagonia vest, that's great, but it's also the end of the life cycle of that recycled plastic. It can't be recycled anymore. So you better really love it if you're going to purchase some recycled plastic clothes.
Right. At our entrance to the Prospect Park, there are clothing recycling bins for the past few years. So that's always interesting. You said something that, you know, I just have to drop a political plug, I guess, that what you said that we are, you know, encouraged to do this like consumer level environmental efforts. And of course that's good. I mean, it makes you think, it makes you conscious of what you're doing and what resources you're using and whatnot. But I've been doing a lot of reading about, you know, all the work that we could do as people, as individuals, is nothing compared to if a manufacturer would change their production, you know, change their packaging, change how they're making products. And that's where the real solutions lie. But I, at the same time, you know, if you could buy a pair of shoes that are recycled or a pair of shoes that aren't recycled, why not choose the recycled ones?
Well, I may choose the recycled ones, but I also, I don't wear sneakers. I like proper, I like something with a leather sole. I mean, unless you're going to the gym, I don't think there's any reason to have plastic on your foot. But no, I think if you have the opportunity to purchase something recycled, of course, that's great. But we don't know if like automatically it being recycled makes it better than something that isn't. Based right. on the process that the dyeing has to go through and whatnot. That's the point I was trying to make. Just slapping a recycle sticker on it does not mean that like the net result of its production was any less harmful to the earth than buying an organic cotton, whatever, of the same item.
Right. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with our conversation. But I wanted to ask you to please support Peter's podcast on patreon.com. I'm running Peter's podcast kind of like a drop-in yoga class where you show up, you enjoy the class, you drop some money in the box when you leave. Except instead of having a box, since we're on the internet, I ask you to use Patreon as the box. Go to patreon.com/peterspodcast and support the podcast for any amount that you like. Thanks so much. Here's the rest of our conversation. So what is the medium that you're thinking of doing this new course in?
So I'm starting out having a website, but eventually I will have an app so people who have completed the course can like access their own personal library from their phone or on the go.
Cool. Yeah. So like if you were out shopping, you could be referring to your choices.
Exactly.
And do you have a time frame for this?
Yeah, by the end of February.
Very cool. Just in time for me to be back from Asia.
Yes.
Looking at my spring wardrobe.
Oh my goodness. Well, I hope people look at their wardrobes in 2020. I mean, it's a new time. It's difficult for me to watch people who pay a great deal of attention to their diet and then wear like awful, like Zara McDonald's clothes. Pick things up out of a free box, which is like basically the same thing as dumpster diving, which also, if you're into dumpster diving, that's great. There is a lot of edible food in there, but I think because it's not going inside their body and people don't get like the immediate reaction of the possible negative consequences of such like mindless acquisition, that they don't think like, oh, that was on the side of the road, I shouldn't take that into my house or whatnot. When we make acquisitions, there are responsibility for life. Mm. I had someone ask me here recently, what do I do with my clothes that I don't want anymore? Like, where do I recycle clothes? And I was like, oh my goodness, I've not done that. Because I buy things that I love so much that the only way they leave my house is in a body bag. Like, it's over. It's fully... And this sort of like discernment and like clean life cycle for their garments is what I really wish for everyone, because that's the ultimate, you know, environmental move, not needing to recycle.
And if you're buying something that's going to endure in that way, then spending more on it, taking the time to choose it, those all make perfect sense.
Yeah. And also knowing, I mean, the average person, like, I had the benefit of, you know, studying fashion at a great school, but I think the average person doesn't know how to open something up and say like, oh, this is an easy fix. I'll take it to my tailor. That'll be 15 euros, super simple. Or, oh, this is a total mess. I will leave this on the rack. Not worth taking home. So that's something else I'll be sharing, just like the fundamentals of clothing construction and how you can identify easy alterations that can be made, or more like life or death surgeries that you may want to avoid.
Just to dip our toe in that, it sounds like identifying a tailor, being accustomed to getting things altered, that's something that you're into, that you consider important.
When we take something, whether it's, you know, an item of clothing that's a gift, or it's from a secondhand store, or you know, we invested a ton of money at a luxury shop on it, we're responsible for it. We've paid money. We're taking it into our life. And it's our job to treat these things like our babies, you know, wash them the way they need to be washed and regularly, hang them up nicely. You don't just take your groceries home and dump them on the floor and like not put them in the refrigerator and then chuck them out. Like, I keep making these food analogies because it's the closest thing I see that we are consuming on a regular basis that impacts our health and relationships in the same way.
Right. You're treating everything as divine.
Everything is divine. Everything is a link. You know, if you're consuming McDonald's all day, it probably won't be so good for you inside. Maybe some of us are at a level of incarnation where they can do that, or at a place in your incarnation cycle, but most of us aren't. Some people can look good in a trash bag, but most of us should probably
they're not runway models.
Put a little more effort into it. No, there's got to be a tapas. You know, that's something that this gentleman discusses in the Shambhala book that I referenced before. Is that he wrote it in the 70s, so he talks about how like everyone's wearing polyester suits and like trying to be casual now, but it's good to feel kind of like the tightness of your clothing.
Mm.
And I just kind of took that to mean that like there's got to be a little tapas, there's got to be a little effort and like burning in, you know, your ensemble.
Right.
So
that's so interesting, because comfortable clothing, talk about a trend. I mean, that's been a trend for, I mean, there's a slice of society that's wearing like, you know, bathing suits basically all the time, but then, but everything else is like oversized and soft and cushy and puffers and plush.
Well, I think it's great that we have the freedom to enjoy ourselves and express ourselves in that way. And if you are wearing those clothes, like hopefully there is, you know, tapas elsewhere in your look with your makeup or wearing nice shoes, but there's got to be effort.
I like it. It establishes balance.
No, it establishes and it signals to everyone around you that you've shown up today. Like we all know that if somebody was walking around in their pajamas in the street, you'd be a little bit concerned about them. Like we can't be in denial that these things matter.
Speaking of pajamas, you know, I recently made this choice to, because I teach in a yoga studio, basically everyone's in their pajamas at the studio all the time, you know, and it just feels like I've decided I'd like to dress up some. So, you know, I'm wearing outfits that seem like they don't have anything to do with me being a yoga teacher, but they have a lot to do with me feeling the way I want to feel walking around in the world.
Well, you go to, I think there can be kind of like a pajama party mentality that doesn't benefit anyone. If everyone's walking around in elastic all day and bare feet, it's not really reflective of the diverse tapestry of society.
So there is this idea of, when you dress a certain way, it has a certain impact, and it's a way of interacting socially, right?
Yeah.
Like you even mentioned as far back as in history, it was like putting you in your place or establishing your place in the society. But now when we make choices of what to wear, it's kind of like a piece of a conversation. And there's a line between you dressing for someone else. Like, you know, I've had people say, well, I'm trying to look good. But you could be
looking
good for...
That's their own demon speaking to you.
Yes, exactly, right? And there's that, the feeling good part, and there's somewhere in between all of that. How do you navigate that?
Well, I think what you're describing is kind of, I mean, when I work with people, I look for like the sattvic place. I try to get them to the place where their wardrobe works that way and each individual look also works that way. I don't think it's to anyone's benefit to be wearing something that they feel awful in. And also,
just because it looks, quote unquote, looks good.
Yeah, but that's the part where, you know, if you are seeing this as a practice of, I don't want to say reconnecting, but how do I put this? Like, you know, vibrating higher and more gracefully. Often our feelings are wrong. Like we may feel great in a pair of sweatpants, but we don't look good in it. Nobody at our job responds to us well. Like it's not the right thing to do. So I like to teach people to kind of, I don't know how we call this in Ishta, but kind of like separate themselves. So I tell people if they're having a real difficult time with this, and you're looking in a mirror, don't look in your own eyes when you're trying something on. So you kind of step away and you're able to be in like a place of neutral observance of how your body looks with this specific garment. I think that's where a lot of my recovering minimalists have come from, is that they got a little too hyped up on a certain cleaning method. You know, their ego was telling them this is like a super great idea. This is for me. I'm into this cult of personality. And at the end of the day, it wasn't what resonated with them or what worked for them, because they weren't equipped with the discernment to know how that would play out.
Right. Or that word, you know, the finding of joy thing was taken too strictly.
Yeah, because your joy could be totally wrong. My joy has gotten me into a lot of trouble. I'm sure everyone's has. Like, that's just not, I don't think that's a healthy starting point for a lot of people. If your joy is, you know, if your joy is coming from your ego, yeah, that's going to lead you straight back to hell with a wardrobe full of things you hate 6 weeks later. It's not.
Right.
It's not the train I want anyone to be on.
Right. So if you can cultivate this ability to, I mean, you can't really step outside yourself too far without losing that connection with, is this me? So you're really finding a balance within yourself to how to evaluate this stuff. And obviously there's going to be some trial and error involved.
Absolutely.
As you learn.
No, I don't. In the beginning of my process, I don't recommend that anybody throws anything out right away. Like, there's a cleaning process, but things get set aside and they get looked over after a month at least of, you know, a period of abstaining from acquisition. Because I don't, yeah, I've seen some pretty tragic results, again, of people going overboard with this minimalism. And it's just as bad as someone having a closet that's over full. You know, one is the Rajas and one is the Tamas, and or a disbalance is still a disbalance that's not serving you.
You know, I think for yourself, like you said, I don't have any sneakers. You are comfortable in dressing a certain way. Other people are going to have more of a their set point or their middle point is going to include more of this comfortable, relaxed, casual, I like to lay around on my couch in my college sweatshirt kind of a look.
You know? I don't think that's a look.
Then when I can also dress up sometime. But I mean, there are times when you're not needing to be concerned about how you look.
No, that's
like relaxing time.
No, that's true. And like, everyone is super different. And my goal is to just help everybody find the balance that's correct for them. I don't believe that there's any one way of dressing the way I believe that there's any one way of exercising or doing anything else. And so it really is a practice of getting people in touch with themselves enough that they can make the right decisions without the noise of advertisement and your trendy cousin or, you know, your husband who wants you to dress in a way that might make you feel uncomfortable or whatever things.
Yeah. So if somebody hears this and they're intrigued with the whole idea, obviously they could get in touch with you.
Yes.
I'll put some links in the show notes for ways to do that.
Definitely.
And, is there like little a kernel of also how to just begin to start thinking about this? Cause it's some of this is kind of radical thinking for a lot of people. And so, like I've heard you use the phrase that you mentioned a little earlier, this idea of what you put on your body is not so different from what you put in your body in terms of eating or something. Mm-hmm. So you could bring the same kind of attention to it.
Yeah, I would say that would be the starting place, just to start applying that same thinking to your sweaters and shoes and jeans as you do to your oranges and your oatmeal. Or your gluten-free thing.
So if someone were to want to work with you, What does that look like? How long does it take to do?
So if someone was to work with me in the first way, there's no time minimum or maximum, really. There's a set price and we get the job done, whether it's a week or something spaced out over multiple months. And the second way, it only involves 1 hour of like FaceTime interaction or physical interaction, but the client does have work to do beforehand as far as assessing the state of their own wardrobe and reflecting a bit so we can really make the most out of that 1 hour. And then afterwards, I write a report for them that includes, you know, specific tips for them moving forward to adopt and also specific recommendations of items perhaps for purchase.
Cool.
It is cool.
I had a little taste of it. It was awesome.
Yeah, you tried to circumvent my process, Peter. My well-honed system.
Your well-honed process. Sorry about that.
Oh my gosh.
Only because I already had so many ideas about it.
So. But the whole reason I have the segment with questions up front is just so we don't have to waste time in person, you know? Because right. They will inevitably rise to the surface, whether you deal with them proactively or, you know, wait sure. for the conversation.
Well, awesome. Before we go, though, we have to talk about Leo.
Oh, my goodness.
And you and Leo's Instagram fame.
Well, we're not famous. We have a private account because I don't want to be famous. I've been... very into hiding.
You're famous among those who,
okay,
know you.
Okay, thank you. I'll take that.
And who get to be on Instagram with you, but you and Leo have posed all over Europe.
Yes, he's very well traveled.
Who takes these pictures?
I do.
You? You really? Oh, you set them
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I set the timer
and walk yeah. away. Very cool.
And so people are always kind of looking at me, or I'll take pictures of him by himself from like really far away. I don't think he knows uh-huh. that he can move because I'll have him posing in front of a cathedral while I'm like hundreds of yards away or something. He just sits there like a good boy.
I guess we should say who Leo is.
Oh, yeah. Leo's my, he's my French bulldog, but he's Dutch now. He's lived most of his life here. He has a Dutch passport. He's fully integrated.
Very cool. Thank you. This was awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. And I'll see you soon.
Enjoy your evening. Yay. Likewise. Yay.
Okay. Yay. Bye.
Bye. Bye. That's today's episode. I have so many things going on right now. I can't even take the time to say them all. So go to peterfurco.com and check out everything on the upcoming list. One thing I will mention is that Alan Finger, Sarah Finger, and I are repeating our meditation training that we did a couple of months ago because we had so much interest in it, and people who couldn't make it then are going to get to take it now in March. So check that out. And also, Wendy Newton and Ulrika Norbury and I are going to be in Stockholm together in May. So check all that out at peterfurco.com. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk soon. Namaste.